You may have seen the recent headlines about Margaret B. Jones, the half-white, half-Native American author who wrote an acclaimed memoir about her life in Los Angeles' South Central neighborhood dealing drugs for the Bloods. Except, oops, none of that is true. She actually grew up pretty well off in the suburbs and went to private school. Why do people write fake memoirs? My next guest has spent some time looking at this phenomenon. He's a journalist and author who wrote a book about one fake Holocaust memoir and just wrote an article for Slate magazine about another. Blake Eskin, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Blake, your family's Holocaust story was snaked and published, but let's save that juicy tale for later. Let's start with Margaret B. Jones,
sure,
a.k.a. Mm-hmm. Margaret Seltzer, the definitely not a member of the Bloods and author of Love and Consequences. Her book got rave reviews and then was recalled after it came out as pure fiction. How does this happen, Blake?
Well, I think there's a couple of questions. One is, how does a person develop a fantasy like this? And I actually think that's something that's more common than we'd want to believe. Her fantasy, I mean, here's someone coming from, you know, a white girl from the suburbs is pretending that that she is a person of mixed race who's, you know, in the, you know, selling drugs in South Central Los Angeles in the ghetto. There's some sort of fantasy of, you know, being more authentic, being, you know, closer to this, you know, and being in sort of a place of a victim. And so that fantasy is playing out in her writing. Now, how does something like that get, you know, published is another question. And I think that, you know, for the same reasons why certain fantasies appeal to people about the ghetto being an authentic place to be,
right,
or an authentic place to be from, that sort of being real, keeping it real, that whole idea. I mean, I think that both plays out in her own thinking and also in, you know, why people want to buy into a story like this.
Well, is that the key word, buy into it? I mean, does it make more money if a story like that comes out as a memoir than she could just write it as fiction?
Yeah, but I mean, I think that, I mean, the reason people read memoirs, I mean, memoirs are fundamentally, or this kind of memoir, I mean, I'm not talking about, a professor's memoir of his literary adventures or something like that, but this kind of memoir is fundamentally, whether it's, you know, the Margaret Seltzer book or these false Holocaust memoirs that we're going to talk about in a minute, they're fundamentally stories of survival. I survived life in the ghetto and made it out to be able to tell you this story today.
But it's been almost 2 years, or no, it's been just over 2 years since The Smoking Gun uncovered all the untruths in James Frey's memoir, quotation marks, A Million Little Pieces. Why aren't editors and publishers learning their lessons, or are they willfully not wanting to know something's untrue?
Well, I mean, it's a couple of things. Part of it is the book publishing business is, you know, when you write a book, you sign a contract saying that what you're saying is true, and you warrant that it's true. And so historically in the book business, it's not been the publisher's responsibility to check things out, to fact check things. It's not like a magazine where you have fact checkers. But also, I think that people in publishing are probably more like Margaret Seltzer than the Margaret Jones character. They're, you know, affluent people, mm-hmm, grew up in a comfortable environment. And, you know, confronting like someone like that is very intimidating. And daring to say, I don't believe you is a scary thing to do. And maybe you're afraid, even a hurtful thing to do.
Which I imagine would be the same problem if you were daring to say to someone, did you really live through the Holocaust?
Well, I mean, you know, I think it is the same kind of problem. And I think with the Holocaust, you have the whole phenomenon of Holocaust denial, and that makes it that much harder to say something like that. Although, in the case of the Misha de Fonseca,
let's talk about that. So you just wrote this article in Slate about the memoir Misha, A Memoir of the Holocaust Years.
Right,
tell
right.
Us
so
about
basically,
it.
It's the story of a girl who, you know, at age seven, her Jewish parents gave her in Brussels to this foster family. She ran away, walked by herself from Brussels to the Ukraine across thousands of miles, lived twice in the forest with wolves, walked into the Warsaw Ghetto and out by herself, and also killed a Nazi who she had just witnessed raping someone else. So it's an incredible story.
Uh-huh.
And the question about, you know, and incredible means both amazing and unbelievable. And I think that her book was able to be both for a really long time.
And so who is Misha DeFonseca?
Yeah, Misha really? DeFonseca really is her. She was born Monique DeWall. Her husband's name is DeFonseca, so she's Monique DeFonseca now. And she is a Belgian girl. Apparently, her parents were members of the Belgian resistance and were rounded up by the Nazis. And apparently her father had betrayed other members of the resistance, so they were somewhat in disgrace. And so instead of that kind of complicated story, it became much easier. And she put it in her confession. She said she felt Jewish because she felt like an outsider.
But and so then, she wasn't raised by wolves.
But she was not raised by wolves. No.
Like, we have to take a break.
Sure.
When we come back, I want to talk about how your family name was part of a fake Holocaust memoir. Also, we'll talk with undersea researcher Martin Riddle about the new giant species he's discovered. I'm Faith Saley, and this is Fair Game from PRI. I'm Faith Saley, and this is Fair Game from PRI. I'm talking with Blake Eskin, a reporter and writer who's been following the recent spate of fake memoirs. Blake, before the break, we were talking about Misha, a memoir of the Holocaust years, and you found out about Misha when you were working on your own book. And you wrote about Misha, you mentioned Misha in your book, and a lawyer came to visit you?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a book about this man called Benjamin Wilkomirski, who had written a Holocaust memoir, came out in called Fragments, and his book was about, it was another child who survived the war, who had been from Riga, where my own family is from and where my Wilkomirski relatives come from, and he had passed from there into hiding into a couple of different concentration camps and ended up in Switzerland, and it turned out that he was a Swiss child born to unmarried parents. Father abandoned him, mother gave him up to foster care, and was in he was mistreated by at least one foster family and ended up being adopted and then spun out this story, much like Misha DeFonseca did. And I had heard about her story while researching this. I was in Prague at a conference of other child survivors of the Holocaust. And one of them actually mentioned, I said I was working on this thing about Fragments, and they said, well, you really should check out this book because I think it's total BS. So
what did the lawyer say to you?
Well, I mean, she, you know, we talked, and then, you know, she made a couple of arguments. One was that, you know, the book has been involved in this big lawsuit, and she basically said that anything unbelievable had been something that had been sort of edited or embellished by the publisher. And the second thing is basically, you know, pick on somebody your own size. You're picking on a victim. You're picking on a victim of the Holocaust. And you know, why, you know, asking questions is making her suffer more. And, from meeting other child survivors of the Holocaust, people who, you know, may not, you know, don't have may not have birth certificates, may not have, family photos, may not be able to establish their story, and may not have complete memories of what happened to them. You know, you understand why you need to be sensitive to that. But at the same time, I mean, Misha's, you know, when Misha was published, the publisher sent the book to two very reputable Holocaust scholars looking for blurbs, and they both basically said, this is nonsense, don't publish it. So,
because there were errors,
well,
it was too unbelievable.
Factual errors. I mean, I think part of it is like the Wilkomirski story. Both of these stories, I mean, she take in the whole experience of the Holocaust as one person's life. They take you from the Nazi invasion into hiding, into the camps or into the Warsaw Ghetto. And so through this huge, huge, huge narrative. And, you know, there's so many I mean, I think also just, you know, the timing was off, you know, the wolf story, and especially that the fact that she lived with wolves twice. Was just, you know, that was just...
No, she was really begging for some...
Right. And yet, you know, and the book...
Skepticism.
Right. And the book didn't do very well here, but it did very well in Europe. So, has just been turned into a movie, which is, I think, finally why she's finally been... outed. So
your book that you wrote in 2002, it's called A Life in Pieces, The Making and Unmaking of Benjamin Wilkomirski. Tell me how you actually, I mean, your family embraced him as a long lost relative, right? Will you tell this story?
Yeah, I mean, so it actually began, he wrote this book. It was published, I mean, Misha was published by a sort of small publisher in Massachusetts. Fragments was published by a major publisher, by Schocken Books. He won the Jewish Book Award in the U.S. He won awards in Britain and France. And I actually met him when he was brought to the U.S. by the Holocaust Museum in Washington. He was giving a series of talks sort of on a fundraising tour for the museum. And when I met him, I brought together members of my family to meet him, and my family was very excited to meet him. He had basically, he didn't quite know who he was his story. He thought his name was Wilkomirsky. He thought he'd come from Riga, and when he went to Riga, he found a document referring to Wilkomirsky, who happened to be the brother of my great-grandmother. And so when he found that, you know, we sort of said, well, I mean, you know, if you were able to find your way to this, maybe we are related to you. And, you know, I was kind of one of the lone holdouts in the family. Most people in my family just totally embraced him. And he was a little bit wary of us. And I mean, I think just because, you know, I'm a journalist, I was working as a fact checker at the time. I'm sort of constitutionally a skeptic like that. You know, I sort of didn't know, like my skepticism was on the level, well, is he a Wilkomirsky? Is he not a Wilkomirsky? And then about a year later, a Swiss journalist named Daniel Gonsfried came out with an article and produced a lot of documentation saying that, hey, you know, here is who this person really is. He's really named Bruno Grosjean. He's really born in Switzerland, and here's the information.
And so Bruno Grosjean just entirely made this whole thing up?
Yeah. Yeah, he made the whole thing up. He was not Jewish. He was in Switzerland during the whole war. I think like he and Misha are both, you know, you have someone like Margaret Jones who's, you know, fantasy. I do know people who, not that, you know, who imagine themselves as more a product of the ghetto, more authentic, more of a victim than they really are, you know, and I understand that sort of dynamic with someone like...
That's most white rappers, I think.
with someone like Misha or with someone like Bruno, you know, the story is more that here's someone who, you know, they grew up during the war. They had a genuinely bad experience and... You know, and also came from broken homes and developed some sort of fantasy. I mean, we don't know exactly why either of them did. You know, Bruno never offered an explanation. Misha offered an explanation, but she offered it through a lawyer. So, you know, you don't know really what was going on in her mind. But, you know, there's a fantasy playing out that, you know, that sort of my suffering may be as bad as, you know, as I imagine. This is my reality. Yeah. And this is my, you know, like, you know, the way people say, oh my gosh, it's like hell in here. You know, I think it, you know, it's like a Holocaust. My childhood was like a concentration camp. And so you start with that kind of metaphor and that kind of turns into an identification and then it becomes a persona.
We only have about a minute left, but I have to know how your family reacted when you told them this long lost family member was a full-on liar.
Some people were very, very upset. And a lot of the book, in the book, I actually take my mother with me to Riga because she was, you know, she was loyal to him and she was upset when I questioned publicly that maybe he wasn't a Wilkomirsky. And then, you know, but I think when we got to Riga and when we found actual proof of our own family, records of our own family, and then I went on and found some actual Wilkomirsky relatives who had survived the war and were living in Israel, I think everybody finally has accepted, you know, that, you know, reality.
And so, Mr. Bruno Grosjean has not sent you guys a sorry note?
We haven't been in touch, no. So
fell off the Christmas card list.
Exactly. Huh? Or the Hanukkah card list.
Sorry about
exactly.
That. Yeah. He didn't know which one to be on. Right? Because you said he wasn't even Jewish?
That's right. But okay. But very big on, like, you know, Jewish stars in the house and so forth. So I'm sure he would have sent Hanukkah cards. So
finally, if you were going to write a fake memoir, Blake, what would you want to have yourself do?
Oh, that's a really good question. I've never been asked that one.
The page is your oyster.
Yeah, I think, you know, maybe like an explorer. I don't know, like explored like, you know, or something in the Wild West maybe.
Oh, okay. I was going to say you should keep listening because we're going to talk about exploring underwater and giant spiders.
Oh, great. I would love to be a giant spider in another life. So
excellent. Blake, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Blake Eskin is a journalist and the author of A Life in Pieces, The Making and Unmaking of Benjamin Wilkomirsky. He also edits the New Yorker magazine's website.